With the vote less than a week away, both opponents and supporters of extending a half-cent sales tax to pay down Jacksonville's pension obligation are facing crunch time. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and watch the show now, too, with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. And just ahead, former City Council Presidents Bill Bishop and Stephen Jost join the show. They say extending that half-cent sales tax will just push the problem off onto future generations. We want your calls right now at 549-2937. Then later, one local tutor shares the secrets. She tells us what your child's teacher is really thinking and what she wishes or he wishes you knew about your kid's academic progress. Then it's back to school and the help of Dignity You Wear. All of that ahead. But first this hour, it's getting down to the wire for both supporters and opponents of Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry's plan to tackle the city's massive pension problem. That unfunded liability is in the billions, and it's dragging down Jacksonville's finances in a major way. Now, on the ballot in next Tuesday's primary is a proposal to extend the Better Jacksonville Plan half-cent sales tax to pay down those pension obligations. Mayor Curry says this is the best possible solution to the problem. However, some prominent opponents are starting to push back and voice their opposition. This morning, we welcome two of them as former City Council Presidents Stephen Jost and Bill Bishop joined the show to explain why they're opposed to the Yes for Jacksonville campaign. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
And where do you stand on Yes for Jacksonville? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on Facebook. Bill Bishop, let's begin with you. Just the other day, Mayor Lenny Curry held a press conference with a slew of prominent community leaders explaining why Yes for Jacksonville, in his view, is necessary to tackle this problem. Here's a short portion of what the mayor said.
Well, the small group that's come out publicly, they don't have a solution. Well, some don't have a solution, others have an academic solution that will not work. They don't have a plan. They don't have an answer. And we've been debating this for a decade now.
Okay. Lenny Curry's saying he's shown leadership, maybe if this isn't a perfect solution, at least it's something to try to get around this problem. You, Bill Bishop, ran for mayor against Lenny Curry. You also served as a former president of the Jacksonville City Council. Why is this proposal, in your view, not the way to go?
The answer is real easy. It's more of the same thing that we've been doing in this city for 30 years, which is kicking the can down the road. It's real easy to see why everybody got on board on this thing, because it was a easy way to not have to tackle the problem and say you are at the same time.
And what would you say to those like Curry who are saying, well, people are coming out now, naysayers are coming out, maybe they have sour grapes, personal animus against me. What would you say to those who might look askance at your argument against this and see another motive?
Well, people put a lot of motives behind all sorts of things. The mayor won. I didn't. That is what it is. That's in the past. And obviously, we want him to succeed, because if he succeeds, the city succeeds. And that's really what this is all about. And my problem with this plan, again, is that it doesn't do anything now. All of the plans and all of the studies that have been done over the years, and there's been many, have said the only real way to fix this problem is put money into the system now. And the math is real simple. Even the mayor's own people say this isn't the best solution, but they are saying it's the only solution. And that's where we disagree. It's not the only solution, and there are other ways to do it, and do it now.
Stephen Jost, another former president of the City Council, you have joined Mr. Bishop in opposing this, saying, and I'm quoting, in the past you've said, any tax, just pick one for the love of God. Pick one and do it now. So what, in your view, is the right way to levy, to tax this community to pay down this problem?
Look, there's a plethora of tools in the toolbox, okay? You have to pick the best one. But every plan that we've looked at, okay, over the last 10 years, said you need to start paying now. That was one of the commonalities of every plan. And just for example, this plan adds $1.5 billion on to the tax bill. It doesn't reduce it. Every plan we looked at actually reduced the liability. This increases it. The liability is $2.8 billion. This increases it by over 50%. And not only does it increase it by over 50%, it puts the entire burden on our children and grandchildren. And when I look at it, for example, today, I'm going to a funeral of a gentleman, 92 years old, fought in the Battle of the Bulge, got a Purple Heart. Do you think the greatest generation would ever put this kind of liability on the future generation? I mean, we need to look at what our forefathers did and take that example and step up to the plate and take care of our problems now and not put it on our children. I mean, how this vernacular even got into the American dialogue to even think it's okay to finance something for 40, 45, 50 years is beyond me. We cause the problem. It's not a Democrat. It's not a Republican problem. It's our problem. We all voted for candidates on the council or for mayor that were either Democrat or Republican that supported pension benefits. Well, times have changed. We've had a recession. The economy's not growing as much as projected. And so, you know, we need to change the plan as times change. And one of the things we need to do is to pay now. It's like making a minimal payment. You're paying your credit card off, and then you say to yourself, hey, I can save money. I can make the absolute minimal payment on my credit card, save money. And it, when you look at it over the long term, it's way more expensive. You know, this plan is billions more expensive, billions, not millions, billions. Okay, and you look at every single ad, every commentator, every advocate of the yes, and all they say is, well, we agree on this, this is a good thing. Never in any of their information do they talk about the math or finances of the plan.
Bill Bishop, what then is the best math to put together for this? Do you support, for example, a millage rate increase, property tax increase to attack this problem?
Considering the mindset in Tallahassee right now, and the one thing the mayor did say that I think he's correct on is that no new sales tax was ever going to come out of the legislature. I agree with that because of the what's going on in Tallahassee. Unfortunately, nobody likes to pay more taxes. But by the same token, you don't see people fleeing in droves out of Orlando and Tampa because their millage rate is too high. And theirs is much higher than ours. I think a 1 mil tax increase now is the way to go. We can't get a sales tax. So what is the next best option? That's it. And do it now. Our millage rate is lower than our other peer cities of the state. It's not going to overburden anybody. And put that money toward the pension now.
What about the mayor's argument that future administrations could divert those funds elsewhere? That's why he's ruled this out. Or that's the reason he's given.
Well, that's always a possibility. By the same token, the bill doesn't go away. It has to get paid. And it's just simply time to step up to the plate and fix it. The mayor's key element of this is pass this tax and trust us to do the right thing. Well, if future councils can change a millage allocation, who's to say what can happen down the road 35 years from now when you're dealing with something else? I mean, there's a point at which you just simply got to do the right thing, and this is it.
And we're talking right now with former City Council President Stephen Jost and Bill Bishop. They are against Mayor Curry's pension proposal. It's on the ballot in the August 30th primary. Let us know where you stand at 549-2937, and we'll go to your emails and tweets in a moment. Chris is in Arlington. Hey, Chris, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
All right. Go ahead.
I have one comment. I think, first of all, it's a little disingenuous for two city council presidents that could have raised the millage rate when they were in office to be complaining that now it needs to be raised and this is the only solution. But what I really don't understand is, why is a no vote the solution when we could vote yes, and this could be one component of the solution to paying it off? And by the time that the bill actually becomes due, there will be another mayor or numerous other mayors in that time frame that could also enhance and add other things to help pay off this debt. Why is no the solution and not a yes be part of the solution?
Thanks, Chris. Okay, Stephen Jost, why didn't you raise the millage rate when you were city council president? And what about his other point?
Chris, that's a great question. I mean, excellent question. We actually did raise the millage rate at one point.
Under the Peyton administration, right?
Both and under Alvin Brown. Even though he was against it, we raised it so we could, we didn't want to lay off 80 police officers, close down 5 fire stations, and a number of libraries. And number two, to his point, there's a plan on the books right now that everybody signed off on, and it calls for adding an extra $40 million a year for the next 10 years to the pension plan, okay? And that would have the pension contribution going down to about 12 cents on the dollar. I think Bill said it was now over $1, $1.20, and it would get the thing under control. There's a plan on the books right now.
This is the plan put together by a pension reform task force. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yes, it was at the end of Mayor Brown's administration, and everybody agreed to it. And so what happened is they started looking at the plan saying, well, how are we going to come up with another $40 million a year over the next 10 years? Basically, to me, they punted and said, we're going to come up with another plan where we don't pay anything and we put it on future generations. And what happens is when a new mayor comes in, see, no mayor ever wants to give the prior mayor credit. Okay, John Peyton had a plan. Everybody signed off on it. The actuarial report was a week late getting in. And so Mayor Brown came in and said, no, I want to do my plan. Mayor Brown has a plan. Finally, at the last minute, everybody signs off on it. We get it done. Another mayor comes in. He wants to do his plan. The fact is, there is a plan on the books right now that pays off a majority of the pension liability by 2030 when these new payments even kick in.
Let me ask you, Bill Bishop, Attorney Bill Shy, who headed up that pension reform task force and put together this plan Mr. Jost is talking about, has a letter or a guest column in today's Times Union pointing out everything Stephen Jost is saying, but at the end of his column, he writes, while Curry's sales tax is not perfect, it is a good alternative and should be adopted by voters. So what about that?
Well, as I said at the beginning, this is a perfect opportunity for everybody to do nothing and declare success because it doesn't do anything now. It pushes the bill down the road. And the problem with voting yes on this, in my opinion, is if we vote yes, we can now wash our hands. We've solved the problem. We can walk away and go on to other things, and we haven't done it. If we vote yes on this, it pushes the problem down the road. If you vote no, it forces the hands of the people in office now to take up the real problem and do something today. That's why I don't support this plan. A sales tax is a perfectly legitimate part of a comprehensive solution. Unfortunately, right now, the only part of the solution that we're seeing is the sales tax to be started 14 years from now.
Let's go to Don. Let's go to Don on the South Side. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hey, go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. I appreciate you disagreeing, but this has been going on for far too long. It's time we did something, and this is the beginning. At least it's one move. And the sales tax is very fair, and it won't be noticed. Nobody will notice it because they're already paying 0.5%. It's not going to change. And everybody who gets the benefits of the police service, the ambulance service, the fire service, is all going to be paying instead of just putting it again on property owners. Maybe later on we have to do that, but we need to get something going, and this is the only thing that's on the books. And if we don't, we're going to shove it further down the road, as you say.
Stephen Jost.
Well, I would argue starting the payments in 2031 is shoving it down the road. I'd rather make payments now and shorten the time horizon of what this liability is. And you have to remember, by adding $1.5 billion in added interest, okay, number one, interest rates are at historical lows, okay? All the interest rate risk is on the high side of them going up. That $1.5 billion is going to look small in comparison to what the real interest will be if interest rates return to anything even close to historic standards. Okay, you look at the Better Jacksonville plan, which Bill and I had to deal with, and I can't tell you the number of projects we had to cancel, and this is a 30-year or projection, because the projections were wrong, and it was all based on sales tax. The sales tax came in way under than what everybody projected. We're going to make a 45-year prediction right now based on this plan of what the economy is going to be and what sales tax brings in. And this is the same. That's why we're in the situation where we're in now, because when you do a defined benefit plan, you're making – A new person comes in, they're 22, 23 years old, they have a life expectancy, say, in their mid-80s, you're making a 60-year prediction, okay? And that's why we're in where we're at, because nobody can make a prediction 45 years down the road. It doesn't work.
And jam lines, meanwhile, for former City Council President Stephen Jost and Bill Bishop, perhaps the most prominent opponents to Mayor Curry's Yes for Jacksonville campaign. We're going to take a few more of your calls. We'll get to your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments in a moment. Tommy on the north side. Go ahead, Tommy. How are you?
Hi, Melissa, and thank you for your guest. Two quick things I have. One, we've also got to consider that sales taxes are regressive sales taxes. So we all buy the same thing. We buy our groceries, our furniture, our cars, and we pay the sales tax on that. But individuals that are poor, it has a harsher impact on them. It is equal when it comes down to your millage and your property taxes. It's based on the status of living that you're in. So that's the first thing. And the other thing, I'm kind of sick of these schemes to avoid us paying our equal fair share of taxes. The garbage fee, it's a scheme so that we don't increase the taxes. This, another scheme for us not to pay taxes. When we come to the understanding that we need police officers, we need safe streets, we need drivable streets, we need to pay our fair share for that. And the way Florida is set up, the way we pay for this is through our property taxes and a combination of sales taxes. But the fairest way to go is to just add the one mil. And it's not going to be that much harder for anyone that's currently paying their property taxes. But it does take care of, if you're in your house, you need the police, you dial 911, look here, that's going to ensure that by you paying your property taxes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tommy. And so much feedback. Bill Bishop, I'm going to throw quite a bit of it at you now. Here's another letter we got the other day from another former city council president, Eric Smith. And he writes, the numbers and projections have been worked to death. Different sources come to different conclusions. Here's what is irrefutable. The referendum is the only plan in play right now after 12 years. And they whine about gridlock in Washington. It's amazing we even have a solution available on the ballot. And he's in support of it. Here's another email from Bill in Springfield. I didn't vote for Mayor Curry and I'm a registered Democrat. If the detractors are correct and this doesn't solve the problem, there's nothing preventing future administrations from taking further action. The proposed plan is at least part of the solution, and that's good enough to vote yes. Your thoughts?
I suppose that's a viewpoint that could be felt by people. Yes, there's always an opportunity to do something in the future. The propensity of government is to not do things that are hard. We know that. We see it all across every spectrum of government as it is. This plan does exactly that as well. It pushes the hard work down the road. It takes, in a sense, something that people also aren't thinking about on this whole thing. It takes a tax off the books that has historically been used for infrastructure improvements in this city and makes it used for something else. We have $700 million worth of unfunded liabilities in the capital maintenance department in the city and no way to pay for it. What this other also does is that it pushes that tax increase, which will have to happen, onto the back of some future leader of the city who isn't even around yet. So, again, it all goes back to kicking the can down the road, which is what this thing does. It's a way to simply say, we've solved the problem, we're done.
And here are a few more of your tweets and Facebook comments, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. Here's a tweet from one listener. It only makes sense to first raise millage to market standard. This smells of the mayor protecting his legacy over current needs. On our Facebook page, Mr. Jost is right. This needs to be addressed and handled now. This current plan is just another prime example of Jacksonville's chronic leadership deficit, just like the HRO, which they will kick down the road as long as they can. But there are some yes votes on our Facebook page at the same time. Stephen Jost, the polling on this seems to be fairly close. You know, there are fair arguments to be made on both sides of this, quite frankly.
I agree. And the one gentleman that said it's part of the solution, that's a viewpoint, okay? But having been, you know, I'm a CPA, I know how the numbers work. It's so much more expensive at the end of the day, okay, when you defer payments 15 years down the road and then start paying for it versus like taking care of the problem right now.
Here's an email for you guys from Beth. I agree that this plan is just a punt and that to pay more later is a bad idea, but why don't we just sell JEA? That money could be used to make a huge lump sum payment to the pension debt. Yes, the city would lose the annual contribution, but gain taxes to be paid by a private power company.
But they right now submit almost 20% of the revenue for the city when you look at their total payments. And so you're going to lose 20% of your revenue base if you sell them for a one-time gain.
Plus, plus JEA is so highly in debt right now, the market
not
value
a practical
of JEA
solution.
It's not practical.
Okay, calls from across the listening area. Let's go to Jimmy on the west side now. Hey, Jimmy, good morning. What are your thoughts?
Hi there. So I think that a lot of these calls have been real PC on the no side, because we really need to support our mayor here, Lenny. We elected him, and he was democratically elected. We want to see this go through here. I'm tired of subsidizing Obama's welfare, and all these people here are living, and this at least is a good way get them to start paying into the system, too. All the illegal immigrants that are getting our welfare, we need to make sure that they are – this pension sales tax does that. It makes
well,
sure
but Jimmy, it would be a dedicated source to pay down pension obligations for police officers, firefighters, people that have are working people that, you know, are under collective bargaining, are expecting a pension when they retire. I mean, it really doesn't. I appreciate your call and your thoughts, but just to be clear, this is about honoring obligations to those taxpayers in this city that have worked, you know, and serve the city. But I appreciate
exactly.
your call.
Exactly. We need to honor those obligations to our law enforcement officers.
And that's Jimmy on the west side. Stephen Jost, what about that?
Well, first of all, I'd tell Jimmy I understand what he's saying. There are a lot of people that don't pay taxes. Almost half the people don't pay federal income tax, for example.
They pay other taxes. But they don't earn enough to pay federal income tax.
Some. Yeah. True. But what I'd say to Jimmy, a lot of illegal aliens, if you will, they are on, say, in the shadow economy. And so like the yard man that shows up, you pay him in cash. He's not paying sales tax anyways. So I don't think I certainly understand his intuition and his feelings, but just by passing a sales tax per se is not going to make a lot of these people pay their quote unquote fair share in taxes because of the shadow economy, and they often deal in cash and barter.
What about his point of view that we need to support the mayor who was democratically elected and support his agenda? What do you say to voters who are inclined to think along those lines? Bill Bishop.
Well, just because a mayor has an agenda doesn't mean it deserves to be supported if people don't think it's a good idea. If people think it's a good idea, they're going to support it. If they don't, they're not.
Let's go to Mike in Arlington. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey. I'm sorry. It was kind of sudden transition there.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think the thing that was interesting to me is that, you know, we elected Curry, And let's talk about the democratically elected Curry. We elected him. He, you know, pushed forth, you know, this as being his big issue. This was the thing he was going to solve. And I think a lot of people are dismayed by how weak the solution he came up with is. I mean, if we're electing him to make hard choices and do something strong, I think people are really surprised at how weak this whole approach is. And at some point, you've got to go, well, why did we elect you anyway, if this is all you can come up with? But, you know, the last caller kind of made my next point, which is, you know, how can you spend, you know, 2.5 decades, 3 decades demonizing taxes, demonizing tax increases, demonizing government as nothing more than a pass-through to welfare, and selling that position to a lot of low-information types and everybody else, and be surprised when all of a sudden a mayor who is Republican and campaigns as a conservative is hesitant to raise taxes to solve a government problem. So, you know, I'll take my answer off the air, but, you know, the reality is we've kind of created this situation for ourselves by allowing this attitude about taxation and government to really fester over the past few decades. Thank you,
Mike. And here's an email from Robin Murray Hill, Stephen, saying much the same. I am weary of hearing this no new taxes mantra. If Jacksonville is to honor our commitments to firefighters, police, and first responders, it's time to bite the bullet. As a homeowner, I am happy to pay a bit more in order to make our city solvent. You gentlemen are both Republicans. What about the point of view from that caller that the anathema to raising taxes, which is more common on the Republican side, is partly to blame for this?
I agree. We actually cut the property tax, I believe, 13 years in a row. And while cutting the millage rates, we spent, there was a surplus pension fund that was in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And so we spent that entire surplus. I think there may be a few million left in it. And so my point is cause and effect. Okay, we cut that millage rate to one of the lowest in the United States for any major city, cause and effect. So if that's part of the problem, it seems to me like it'd be part of the solution. Number two, the Republican mantra this person was talking about. Okay, I'm sick and tired of hearing Republicans talk about generational theft and talking about the $20 trillion that's on the books at a national level. And then when it comes to a local issue, they can't walk the talk, okay? We're going to put it 15 years down the road and make our children pay for it, just like the national debt. That's the bottom line.
What would you say, meanwhile, Bill Bishop, to the argument that there are other people opposed to this plan because they've called it all tax, no reform? They don't think enough is being done to negotiate a new agreement with the unions.
Well, I think that's also part of the issue. If you're gonna sell a package, sell a whole package. Talk about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. One of the things about this whole program is that it says at least one of the pension plans will be closed. Well, what does that mean? Which one? What are you going to do as a substitute? What ideas do you have as a substitute? There's so many things about this whole thing that are nebulous that we're basically saying we're being asked, pass this program and trust us to do the right thing. And I ask over the years, how's that worked out for us? We don't really have a good track record with that.
Let's go to Brad at the beaches. Hey, Brad, how are you? What are people saying about this out at the beaches?
Well, number one, you know, it doesn't go to support the Jacksonville Beach Fire Department or the Jacksonville Beach Police Pension. And so why would, at the beaches, would we vote for a tax for something that really all we use is the ambulance service? And that's just one side of it. The other side, I would say that Mayor Curry has been a disappointment on this. He ran on tackling this issue. And I feel like putting $1 billion on it is not tackling it. It's kicking it till he's not in politics anymore.
It's $1.5 billion.
Last thing, if I could put in there, is there any way we could look at moving these pensions for the firemen and the policemen to the state Florida retirement system? I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't like $1 billion or $2 billion in being underfunded, but is that part of the solution, or has that been mentioned?
I think.
What about that?
Well, the existing pension plans, the state would never take them over because they're too underfunded. We're stuck with that. We can't get rid of that. Going forward, I think this has been discussed as in the back rooms of part of this, all new police and firefighters going into full retirement system. I think that's an excellent idea. Over time, that gets us out of that pension business, because the Florida retirement system is one of the best-run public pension systems in the country. Why would we not want to be a part of that? To me, that's a good idea.
Mark is on the west side. Mark, your thoughts. Good morning.
You know, I can't help but thinking that if the Jaguars threatened to leave, and the only way to keep them here would be a millage increase, Lenny Curry would be waving the flag for that in about 2 seconds. A couple of my points that I really don't like about this is, you know, first off, why are also so much money for this plan coming in from foreign sources and going into Lenny Curry's PAC? You know, it's been rumored for quite some time that Lenny Curry is going to run for mayor, run for governor next time that's up. And it seems like we've got all these commercials, and he's really beaten the drum. It's, you know, present company accepted. I hate politicians, and this is one of the reasons why. It just smacks of corruption. And the second point I have, you know, we've known this for a long time about this pension plan, and we don't seem to be having the unions. You know, there are a couple of mechanisms that the city council and the mayor's office can do to force the unions to come to bargaining right now. You know, Lenny Curry leaves this out, but we're not doing anything to negotiate a future pension plan right now, and that's what we should be doing and concentrating on.
Okay, thanks, Mark. All right, a few points in his call. Stephen Jost, there is a PAC. Their money has been brought in from outside the city on this issue. At the same time, though, we haven't just seen the mayor on TV. City Councilman Tommy Azzurri, perhaps the most prominent Democrat in town, is also supporting the mayor's plan. We're seeing him in television ads. There is high-profile bipartisan support for the mayor's plan. But what about that caller's remarks?
As far as foreign sources coming into Lenny's PAC, I'm not familiar with that at all. I haven't studied that part of the issue. What I've studied, and when I first started hearing about the plan, I'm like, this sounds like it's pretty good. And as I studied it further and I learned the payments weren't going to start for 15 years and it added another $1.5 billion in interest alone, and knowing the economy like I do, and the interest rate risk is on the high side, I said, no, I can't support this. And it all really started at the kitchen table with my wife. I asked her what she thought about it. She goes, I think it's a good idea. And then when I told her it added $1.5 billion of interest, and my son Christopher, who's 10 years old, will be 55 years old, will spend almost his entire adult life paying off our obligations, this generation's obligations, she almost became enraged. You know, moms don't like it. They don't like putting this off on their kids. Very protective of our kids. And so, you know, when we talked about the issue at the family table, no, we can't do this. It's just, you know, it's taxation without representation. We're taxing a future generation right now that can't even vote. Okay, we're making the next generation not better off, but in my opinion, worse off. And those are two cornerstones of this democracy. Since 1776, every generation has made the next generation better off. And if you look at all the propaganda and commercials, it's interesting talking about Lenny's commercials. Never once in any of the commercials do they talk about the math or the financing mechanisms.
We'll have to leave it there, and I appreciate you both being here. An enormous amount of feedback on this. Thanks for joining us with your thoughts.
Thank you very much for having us.
Joined just now by former City Council President Stephen Jost and Bill Bishop. And much more still ahead. Later, back to school and dignity you wear. But up next, speaking of back to school, what teachers wish parents knew. That's in a moment.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a federal judge orders a review of nearly 15,000 recently discovered Hillary Clinton emails. A new batch related to the Clinton Foundation was also released. The ongoing controversy over Clinton's emails.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are pleased to announce that Pedro Noguera, national expert on public education in America, is this year's morning keynote speaker at Teach, Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. For more information, visit wjct.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, as parents settle in to work on homework this season with their kids, parent-teacher communication can often be an issue. There can be frustration on both sides. Right now, we're talking with someone who has a window into the thinking of both groups, Michelle Kaiser of Empower Tutoring. She joins us now to tell us what teachers really wish parents knew. And I can't wait to hear, because I'm a parent. Michelle Kaiser, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So you work every day with kids, but you also talk to their teachers.
I do.
Yeah.
And I actually employ some of the teachers as part of my team. So I get a little bit of a window into not only the parents' frustrations, but what the teachers are telling me, too, that they really wish parents would do or would know and to try to help their students.
Right. And as we get into the school year, teachers try to communicate with the parents. Parents try to email or call back. What are some of the most common communication problems, and what do teachers really want to communicate that they feel parents aren't getting?
I think one of the big things I hear, at least when coming from parents that have students that are struggling or having conflict, is that they feel like the teacher's just not present, doesn't care, you know, has just sort of written their student off. And one of the most important ideas is that the teachers really do care, especially if you talk to them, you know, they're really invested in, you know, each and every student's progress. And so if it looks like the teacher maybe is pushing your student or is trying to kind of get them outside their comfort zone, that's because they actually want to help them grow and help them learn and to build those skills.
And I know that this is a common refrain. Teachers wish parents carried the ball a little bit more at home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And is that something you hear a lot?
I do. Yeah, I hear that a lot. And I also hear that that the parents often don't know what that means. You know, they have an idea that maybe they need to be doing more with their student, but what does that actually look like? And so the teachers that I talked to had some really good ideas about even just reading with younger students every day, reading with them either to them or with them, and sort of really building that reading engagement. They can practice math facts, and it doesn't always have to be sort of rote homework. There's a lot of fun games and iPad apps or opportunities that parents can be invested in being the primary educator in their child's life. And that's where where teachers really would like to see is that, you know, that parents aren't sort of outsourcing that responsibility for all the education.
Now, this one is a really fascinating one. You find that kids really internalize the parental narrative or the parental bias. So it, particularly if girls hear their mothers say, well, I'm not very good at math, I can't help you with that, then the daughter will adopt an identity that she's not good at math.
Absolutely. And it's so, it's definitely not on purpose. You know, the mother is just stating her truth, and it's so hard because parents don't often think about what their children are hearing, the real message there. The, you know, studies have shown that if a mother makes a statement to her daughter about her own personal struggles with math, that the daughter's her achievement will decline almost immediately.
Well, what should parents be telling their kids about math, particularly the girls, but the boys too, if they're struggling?
Yeah, I think the idea is that we haven't found a solution yet, is what the parent idea should be. You know, not that, you know, there's some intrinsic reason why you can't do math, but it's like we just need to keep working towards finding a solution. And from my experience, you know, I've heard lots of students tell me that they can't do algebra, and I have yet to find one where that's actually true. It just means that, you know, maybe some of the more traditional ways of presenting the material hasn't been effective. And so we just need to look for creative solutions.
And that's really your forte, is you present this material in a way that kids can process it one-on-one. In a big class, they may not always excel. But when they get that one-on-one attention and you can communicate it in a way that they understand, they do better at math.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I found is that with a lot of my students, I work myself primarily with high school math, although my team covers pre-K through pre-calc, is that we're able to get in there and really nail down what some of the fundamental ideas that might be missing, which in a lot of cases is sort of this confidence that students have, this belief that they're somehow not able to be successful in math, either from something that they may have heard at home or some experience they've had previously.
Now, speaking of math, I know there's conflict right now between teachers and parents about the quote-unquote new math. Every few years or so, we get new math. But what about that? Because I have been there myself, where I was trying to teach my kids multiplication. And they said, no, you have to do this tower. And I said, no, it's much quicker and easier to do it this way. You don't need to do this big complicated tower.
Yeah.
I was taught via multiplication tables.
Absolutely.
And I know that this is a very common problem where teachers are trying to teach math in particular in a new way. Parents are not on board with that. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah, and I totally understand the frustrations on both ends of it, because I have had to go back and relearn myself some of the quote-unquote new way. And I can tell you, it's actually pretty cool. You know, the stuff that I see these students doing is phenomenal. It's amazing. And I'm totally behind the efforts of the teachers. And what I encourage parents to do is to, you know, instead of just sort of giving up or turning in, I had one teacher tell me that, you know, she hates to see when students will turn in the homework because their parent gave up, not because they gave up. It's an opportunity for the parent to practice some conflict management skills and to demonstrate to their student and to their child, how do we handle situations that we aren't experts in, you know, and to reach out to the teacher and to try to get to become an expert. Because if you ask the teachers, there's a motivation behind it and they're more than willing to help.
Right. And that face-to-face with the teacher is so important too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, being able to approach it with an attitude of openness and willingness, that it doesn't have to be a confrontation. It doesn't have to be, you know, the teacher's out to get me, the teacher doesn't like my student. Because when the student is hearing that at home, that the teacher is unfair, that they're out to get their student, then they're going to take that attitude and bring it into the classroom and be less cooperative and less willing to learn. So we as parents, and I've got, you know, young children of my own, if we can really try to approach these conflict situations with, you know, with honesty and maturity and willingness to communicate, it'd be amazing not only what we can learn and grow, because I've had to go back and relearn a lot of this, but that we can also demonstrate to our children how to handle these types of situations when they come to them in life.
Great advice, and timely too. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And she tutors children from pre-K to pre-calc. It's Michelle Kaiser, and the firm is M Power Tutoring. That's the letter M, Power Tutoring. And we'll be right back.
How you doing?
I feel great.
You know, I've been Googling brain tumors. A lot more common than you think. John Krasinski, who co-starred in The Office, directed and stars in the new film The Hollers, about a family dealing with the illness of its matriarch, played by Margot Martindale. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Krasinski about the film and his 9 seasons on The Office. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world. Early one day, Antonin Dvorak was walking alongside a river, and in the golden light of morning, he saw and heard a red bird with black wings. He was transfixed. He hurried home to include the song of the Scarlet Tanager in his new quartet. We'll hear Dvorak's American Quartet with that American bird song on the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Presenting Next Avenue, a website from WJCT created specifically for adults discovering life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue.
Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, if you love Instagram, show us. And show us how you love WJCT at the same time. As you post Instagram photos this week, use the hashtag #ILoveWJCT. We will pick our favorite of the week and include it in our Friday First Read newsletter. You can subscribe to that by going to WJCTnews.org. Well, finally, this hour, 2015 was the most generous year ever for charitable giving. And one local organization that was a lucky recipient of that is Jacksonville's own Dignity You Wear. The nonprofit got a big challenge grant to kick off its back-to-school campaign. Right now, we're going to hear about it from Chief Operating Officer Janet Rieger. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Greg Kars with the Duval County Public Schools. Good to see you.
Good morning.
It is back-to-school, and we've been talking about that this morning on this show. Janet, this is a campaign to distribute brand-new clothing to students. This is really a wonderful effort. Can you tell us what's happening?
Well, Dignity You Wear procures brand new clothing from manufacturers across the country, and we distribute it through a network of social service agencies, about 70 of which are in Jacksonville, and we have another 150 or so around the country. We're sort of behind the scenes. We provide the clothing to the agencies that then provide it to the students at no charge to the recipient.
Mm-hmm. And tell us how Duval County Public Schools is part of this.
Well, Duval County Schools has partnered with Dignity You Wear for many years now. In 2014, they decided to change the way that they would deliver the clothing to us. So we get large bulk clothing orders. We establish a clothing closet. That's how we're able to distribute the clothing to to students. And last year alone, we distributed clothing to nearly 1,000 consumers.
That's great. And you know, Janet, it's such a tradition to buy back to school clothes for kids. It's such a big deal to kids to have nice new clothes on the first week of school. But for so many kids in this area who are living in poverty, that's not a possibility. And this is a way to boost those kids' confidence and excitement about going back to class.
Absolutely. You see a lot of the back-to-school backpack and school supply drives, but not so much the clothing. So we're really excited to be able to fill that need.
And it's all. And is it all kinds of clothes? It's anything and everything? Or are there certain kinds of pieces of attire that you're really trying to supply more than others?
Well, good basic school-appropriate attire is what we strive for.
Okay, so the back-to-school campaign, by the way, this is running through the end of August, right, Greg?
Yes.
So there's still time for people to support this. How can people be part of this and get clothes to local school kids?
Well, the best way is to contact Dignity Wear and find out how you can provide funds to them. So I can assure you, just our partnership with them, the work they do, the giving, you know, one of their mission is to provide brand new clothing to school children. So their mission, our mission, it just really jives well. So contact Janet and she'll inform you.
And you know, Janet, as I'm looking at this information, a very small amount of money goes a long way. $10 to Dignity You Wear provides 2 new outfits.
Absolutely.
$20 gets a kid a new coat.
Yes.
Not a big investment.
Right, absolutely. All the clothing is donated to us, so our expense really is just managing our warehouse and staff.
And the story of Dignity is such a wonderful story. It was founded by Holocaust survivor Henry Landworth.
Yes.
When he came to this country after surviving the Holocaust, he had no clothes, and he felt he had no dignity. And he was and he eventually became very successful, but he was motivated to provide that dignity to others. It's a beautiful and touching story.
It really is.
And it's a national nonprofit, by the way, based here in Jacksonville.
Yes.
So again, it's Dignity You Wear's Back to School campaign. A donation as small as $10 will provide brand new back to school clothes for local students, and every dollar donated is going to be matched up to $22,500. So your money will go twice as far. If you make a donation of as small as $10 to Dignity You Wear before the end of August, but of course, you can always give more. New clothes boost confidence and participation, leading to success in the classroom. It's learning with dignity, clothing kids for success at dignityyouwear.org. So support them right now. Janet Rieger is the chief operating officer, and Greg Kars with Duval County Public Schools running their clothes closet. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum is running the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and watch the show with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, a federal judge orders a review of nearly 15,000 recently discovered Hillary Clinton emails from her time as Secretary of State. That discussion's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.